Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
Bruce Williamson joins me, spokesperson from Rail Future, the UK's leading independent organisation that campaigns for better rail services for passengers and freight. Bruce, good afternoon to you.
Hi.
So I listed my moans. James listed his moans. What are your moans?
Well, I think the one that springs to mind straight off, and you mentioned it as well, is the outrageous cost of rail fares in this country. You know, we do have, if not the most expensive, but amongst the most expensive, and also an insanely complex rail fare structure. So, you know, not only are the tickets expensive, but actually finding the cheapest one is really, really difficult.
So that would be your top priority, would it, pricing?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more to be done on, obviously we don't like the idea of ticket offices being closed. And there's a whole litany that you described of, overcrowding. That's another big one, I suppose, particularly if you're unlucky enough to travel through Birmingham New Street, you know, on cross country. That really is the sardine express, isn't it?
Do you know what happened to me at Birmingham New Street once, Bruce?
It has happened.
No, do you know what did happen to me once?
Oh, look, going on.
I took up smoking for a day. That's how bad it got. On the journey I was on from Bristol to Liverpool, nearly killed me.
Right.
And then I decided it was time to try 10 Silk Cut. There you go.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Didn't smoke again.
Just to say, I mean, you know, having said that, right, you were talking about the golden age of steam, and I think someone from the golden age of steam would be actually quite impressed with these sort of electric trains that don't pollute and can start up. You know, it takes about several hours to get to light the fire and get your steam engine hot, and there's smooth ride, air conditioned carriages,
and then they'd make a journey from London to Liverpool or London to Edinburgh, and it would be. It would be, oh, my God, what's gone on with the world?
So, you know, the blame for this, where does all the blame for this lie? Because everyone looks at the continent or Japan in rose-tinted spectacles, and in some cases it's better. It's not necessarily better. But, I mean, British railways have suffered from decades of lack of investment. And the other problem we have is the sort of political interference, particularly the stop-start nature of investment. You know, we heard it yesterday or the day before, didn't we? You know, about HS2, is it on, is it off? Well, we haven't had an announcement yet, but that uncertainty adds to costs and makes it difficult to plan a railway, and the same with electrification. So, you know, as ever, and with fares as well, we need to remember that the railway is pretty much centrally managed by the Department for Transport. So let's lay the blame for all the ills pretty squarely at the government, I think.
So where do we take it from here then? Because as things stand, you've got, not every train service is appalling, but most of them go through appalling phases. And lots of them at the moment are going through phases affected by strike action. I think that's over now, isn't it? But the staffing levels are problematic as well. There was those problems a couple of years ago, just before the pandemic, I think I'm right in saying it would have been, with Southeastern. People's lives really disrupted by Southeastern. I mean, marriages ended, jobs were lost, mental health was lost. I mean, I'm saying that in all seriousness. I spoke to people at the time, it was terrible. And I think unless you use trains regularly, you don't realise quite how bad they can be for your health.
No, I suppose not. I mean, I'm lucky in the sense that I've never been a regular commuter on a sort of 9-to-5 basis. And, you know, for some people that can be an absolute nightmare. My personal experiences are a little better than that. But it's, you know, the solution is for us, you, me and the general public, to put pressure on politicians, because they ultimately are the ones who make it happen and who hold the purse strings. So we've got to barrage our MPs and saying this isn't good enough. We demand cheaper fares. We demand more investment. We demand reliable train services. And then just maybe things will get better. But the bad news is that turning around the super tanker of the British railway system, you know, it ain't going to be quick. There are no magic bullets. There are no quick fixes here. It relies on
We've just cancelled the slow fix.
But what do you mean by that?
HS2.
Oh, I see. Do you know something?
No, I do. You know, but I mean, it's looking that way, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, but I again, who knows how it's going to pan out? It's still all up in the air. But yeah, I mean,
also the costs. I mean, why? You know, it's. I think it's a legitimate question to ask why the costs absolutely spiralled and why it wasn't possible to predict more accurately, maybe not totally accurately, but more accurately what those costs would be. Something's gone wrong in that process, hasn't it?
Absolutely. And it's not as if, you know, we don't have the ability to get it right. HS1 is an example of where they did get it right, you know, and they didn't have these outrageous cost overruns and so on. Crossrail, Elizabeth Line, okay, that is late and over budget, but now that it's up and running, it's a massive success story. Mm. And so in that regard...
London again.
Right.
London. So,
yeah, London again, yes, absolutely.
Nothing wrong with London, but the rest of the country needs to have a look in as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, we need Crossrail for the North, also known as Northern Powerhouse Rail. Mm. There's a very strong case for that. I want to see that happen. But, you know, whilst these projects are sort of incompetently managed, it makes that investment in other rail projects harder to sell.
Do you think the political will was ever really there where it mattered for Northern Powerhouse Rail? I don't, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does in the local MPs in the north of England,
yeah.
But in Westminster, I think yes, they probably see it as a nice to have icing on the cake, but not necessarily core.
Is it a uniquely British problem that we can't plan big projects long term unless they've got a royal attached to them?
Well, even then, I think...
See the Elizabeth line for details. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That had to be done before the Queen died so she could open
it,
you know?
It did, didn't it? Yeah. Mm. I mean, no, all countries have their problems. I mean, I know it was a very, very long time ago, but the one that springs to mind was the Canada Olympics of 1976. That was a fiasco, wasn't it? And, you know, I can't think of any good examples off the top of my head. Countries like China, of course, you know, they're dictatorships, so they can just bulldoze through whatever they want and cut corners and so on.
Is our geography the issue, do you think?
Only very slightly. It, Britain is a much more densely populated country than France, so that means that the French have more green fields to slice through, which is obviously a lot cheaper than demolishing houses. But that's only a small factor. I think there are many, many others, and I'll be honest, I don't know what all those other factors are. My expertise is more in railways than sort of project management of building projects, but someone will know the answer. I hope.
I was going to say, I wouldn't put it past them not to. Thank you, Bruce. Thank you. Bruce Williamson, spokesperson from Rail Future.